This is Behind the Mic with Kirkus Reviews, where the subjects are audiobooks and the actors who narrate them. I'm Joe Reed, and joining me, Michelle Cobb. Hello, Michelle.
Hey, Joe. How's it going?
Pretty good. And I know if I'm talking to you, I know there is a theme.
Oh, you know me.
I do know you.
I often have two themes, so so I do. These are titles with surprises narrated by audiophile golden voice winners.
That is a very good theme. I know what the titles are, but share with our listeners, please.
The Original, a novel by Priya Parmar, narrated by Cassandra Campbell. Galen, a romance in black by Walter Mosley, narrated by Dion Graham. The Divorce by Freda McFadden, narrated by January Lavoy, Marin Ireland, and Eduardo Ballerini.
Talk about wonderful voices to be listening to, because I've been listening to all of them, and it has been a great deal of fun. So I'm assuming we're beginning with The Original, a novel.
Yes, this is an earphones winner, and that phrasing or subtitle of a novel was important to me because I needed reminding that it was a novel. It is, in fact, fiction, and it is well written as a novel, but it truly feels like Katharine Hepburn's memoir because it's about celebrities, including her, of course, and Howard Hughes, Cary Grant, and they're making movies that are familiar. So it's real life stuff.
I absolutely agree with that. I kept reminding myself, oh, it's a novel. It's a novel.
Yes.
This isn't the memoir. It's a novel. It felt so real.
It did. And you know, obviously, that the conversations and the corresponding emotions are made up, but its intimacy and its details made it feel like it was something that actually happened. And it's assisted by a hint of how we know each of these celebrities sound. So the narration, to me, heightened the feeling that it's a biography. And I was consistently surprised, there's my theme, that it was not a nonfiction book.
There's so much that's fascinating about this book, but I was really conscious of the way it kind of played with my cultural memory, too.
Yes.
Because Hepburn and Cary Grant and Howard Hughes, they exist so vividly in my imagination, in the public imagination. So I felt like that the audiobook was kind of inviting me to blur the line between documented history and emotional invention.
Yes, I think that's a great way of putting it.
I love this book. And I thought Cassandra, the control was so striking because she's never imitating, which I think makes it so effective. She just evokes the cadence.
Yes.
The confidence of these figures, just enough to create the illusion we're kind of overhearing these private moments.
Well, you can truly understand why she's a golden voice because those people are recognized for their body of work, and much of it is built around kind of disappearing into the text and enhancing the text without getting in the way of it. And so this is a great example where the shades of performance and those touches of recognized voices are perfectly blended. So it was super compelling. I thought a beautifully written book, and then super compelling in the narration as well.
Are there moments that stood out for you when you're thinking about this book?
A lot of it was in the moments of Cary Grant, honestly.
Talk about surprises.
Yeah.
No, I mean, that he would figure so prominently was really surprising.
Yeah, well, I wasn't aware of her relationship with Howard Hughes, and I wasn't aware of how much Cary Grant and Katharine Hepburn were interacting. I mean, maybe that was made up, but seemed to be interacting through this book. So those three characters, in a way, it was about Katharine Hepburn and she's the original, but a lot of the interactions with those particular, I keep calling them characters, but they're humans, you know, real life figures. That's what really stood out to me in this.
It's interesting because I think so much of this novel spends imagining the costs of being watched and being mythologized. And it was really interesting the way it presented Katharine Hepburn, not just as an icon, but somebody who was constantly managing the version of herself she wanted the public to see.
Very true. And I didn't realize, you know, I knew she was a trailblazer in many ways, but I didn't realize how she was involved in the making of these films in interesting ways. And so that, in addition to her celebrity, her impact on the business of Hollywood felt much more real to me through this book.
And I loved the business of Hollywood that goes through this book. Hearing about David O. Selznick and Irene Mayer Selznick, yes, and Cary Grant and Laura Harding, you know, who gets on the 20th century and goes across country with Katharine Hepburn. It was just really, really fascinating. And I really loved Cassandra Campbell, the control of tone that she has in those scenes of old Hollywood glamour.
Yes.
But it's never a caricature.
Yeah, it's just, I keep using the word hint because it was like I knew exactly who she was doing and who she was supposed to be. And yet it didn't feel vastly different from her general narrative voice. And that was perfect.
Yeah. So we're going to hear some. What scene is this?
This is a little bit about Kate Hepburn's family.
All right. This is the original, a novel by Priya Pamar, and it's narrated by Cassandra Campbell.
If you are looking for the girl, she is not here yet. She will arrive soon, 2 years after him, after the boy. They will be called Tom and Kate. There are 6 of them at their peak. After Kate come 4 more, all flame-headed and freckled, but smaller, less articulated. Maybe that happens when there are 6. The last ones get a little out of focus. Mrs. Hepburn was always sure she was going to be the kind of mother who checks to make sure her children comb their hair and keep their fingernails clean. She assumed she would want to stand over them while they brush their teeth and to patch their clothes herself. But she has found that raising children is tedious work and she has other things to do. She wants to be a person in the world.
And I think we have to give a lot of credit to her, too, for having a wonderful narrative voice in parts of this book as it creating the milieu that Katharine Hepburn is born into and moves through. Her family is fascinating.
Yes, and I hadn't realized her relationship with her brother and how that impacted her Hollywood career. And we don't, you know, we're not really hearing about that in the clip, but it is such a big part of the book that I'd feel remiss if we did not mention it.
Yeah. And I also want to say I really like the way Cassandra has so much wit in her performance.
Yes.
And a steeliness. And at the same time, there are these flashes of vulnerability that makes Hepburn feel less like a legend and more like a woman, sort of like working away through ambition and life and fame.
All very true, because isn't that what we do?
Yeah. Great, great, great book. I just loved it. And now we're moving to
Galen, A Romance in Black,
by
Walter Mosley and narrated by Dion Graham.
And the surprise?
Well. I'll first mention this is also an Earphones winner. So that's, you know, an important thing to note. But I do like it when an author works outside their known genre and then surprises me as a reader for being in this genre. So here is Walter Mosley, who I think of as a crime fiction writer, and this is a romance, or at least it starts as a romance. I can't say it ends there. It's got sex, so just be forewarned, and it morphs into a coming-of-age tale. It really is an intriguing departure from the Walter Mosley books I've come to know.
I agree. And yet there were things that were kind of Mosley-esque about it.
Yes.
Because I think he's so good at creating secondary characters, you know, vivid descriptions of them. And they might show up on a page and not show up for another 50 pages, but they're very vivid and we see what their impact is on the principal characters and each other. He creates community.
He definitely creates community.
Plus there is food.
Plus there's food. So let's talk about the book centers around Robert, who is a vegan sous chef, and Jamila, who is a scientist, and they come together. They have a great romance and they have the precocious Galen. And unfortunately, Jamila has cancer and passes away. And so, of course, it's a lot for Galen to handle, and he makes plenty of mistakes. But he's this very smart kid. He graduates from high school before he turns 16. He, however, feels a weight from responsibilities, including caring for his father.
Well, his father is neurodivergent. We're never quite told, but that certainly is true. And then he suffered a head injury.
Yes.
Which certainly complicated that even more. And Galen is taking care of him.
And that's only the beginning. It turns out Galen himself ends up with a head injury as well. So there's a lot to unpack, if I can use that term. There are a lot of layers of family and society. I do think it's worth reiterating that there's a major shift in tone that was a bit jarring for me as I listened. So it was the relationships that we've just talked about and all these amazing characters that kept me listening and kept me engaged and sort of growing with the characters in some ways, if that makes sense.
That does make sense. And I think that's really helped also by Dion Graham's narration, because I thought he was so good at sort of charting the character's emotional aging without being flashy, without dramatic shifts. He just subtly adjusts the rhythm, the emotional weight, so we can hear Galen, for example, moving from precocious child to guarded young man. We can hear Robert aging without, you know, anybody banging our head into it.
Well, this is why he's a golden voice.
Oh, he's marvelous. Well, you know, I always call him the oral shapeshifter.
No, that's true. I particularly find that he has a skill in doing young voices with pace, volume, and emphasis. And that serves really well in this particular book, because it is a coming-of-age tale in many ways.
Well, let me ask you, you mentioned the later tonal shift that sort of reframed the book in some way. Or let me ask you, did that later tonal shift reframe the book for you? Or did it kind of pull you out of the novel? Or how did it leave you?
I think because I was listening to the audiobook, I felt that change and tone shift less, because I was still sort of involved with Dion's voice and able to follow the characters. It kind of softened it for me is the word I've used. I was curious how people who read it with their eyes felt about it. So I did look up some responses, and it seems like a lot of people felt that it was a little too much for them. So I credit Dion for not making me feel that it was an insurmountable change.
Well, he has such an instinct for text and a real instinct also for emotional intimacy, I think, in his narration.
It's true. And that's very important in the first three quarters of the book, where you're dealing with, you know, especially in the romance part. I like that emotional intimacy.
And I really liked the father-son relationship, as complicated as it was.
It's true. And I considered that a romance of its own in some ways.
I agree. I really felt that family, in no small part, aided by Dion and his remarkable sense of conversational flow.
Yes, it is important. The words are smoothly handled, if I might say, by Dion.
Yeah, he keeps dialogue feeling spontaneous and lived in, like people are just saying this.
Exactly. It feels fresh. And I think especially, again, in returning to that first part of the book, the very beginning where you're really getting a sense of the romance between Robert and Jamila, that was a super important piece.
Well, shall we hear a little? Are we going to hear the beginning of the romance?
Yes, we are. Let's do it.
Okay. This is Galen, A Romance in Black. It's by Walter Mosley, narrated by Dion Graham.
She suggested that they go to the County Art Museum down on Wilshire. There were 7 shows in the various galleries of the multi-level museum. Jamila loved art. She worried that her paramour, that was the word she used when explaining their relationship, Robert, would get antsy. But he didn't complain or say he wanted to leave. At first, he didn't understand much of anything they saw, but whenever he'd wonder, he'd just ask, "What's this one about?" He was talking about a video monitor that showed a dapper, middle-aged black man dancing while looking at his reflection in a mirror.
He looks like he's having such a good time, Robert said. But how come they're showing it? Sometimes art doesn't have a recipe, Jamila explained, not knowing what the piece meant.
Even from this short clip, I think we can understand why Dion has won 80 gazillion Audie Awards, I think 11, and something like 71 earphones.
Crazy. Wow.
He inhabits characters, but I always love the narrative voice he chooses. You know, the sort of voice of the author that's telling that story. He really, really does that well, and it's so important to keep driving that story forward. I mean, he has an ability to make silence audible.
Ooh, that's, yes. I love the way you phrase things.
And especially for this book, it's so important.
Absolutely.
All right, so now.
Yes.
The divorce.
So The Divorce is by Freda McFadden, and it's narrated by January Lavoie, Marin Ireland, and Eduardo Ballerini. So it's three golden voices, and there are plenty of twists and turns and surprises, as it were. You might know this author from bestsellers, including The Housemaid, that was made into a hit movie. And she also revealed her own special twist, her real identity. She's been writing under a pseudonym, but she's actually a medical doctor named Sarah Cohen, which I found cool.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about what the story's about?
Okay. So I will try a quick synopsis without giving too much away. So you have Naomi, who's played by Marin. She is shocked when her husband, Jeremy, he's played by Eduardo, surprises her with a move into an apartment so they can have a house remodel. But it turns out that is just a ruse to get her out of the house, and he files for divorce. Turns out Jeremy has moved on to the younger Veronica, who's played by January, and Naomi has to actually fight for custody of their son, Teddy, with no resources as her bank account has been drained.
I have comments. I found Naomi to be such a frustrating character, and I could not believe how stupid she was for so many reasons. It was so implausible, and I commend Marin Ireland, who just gives her enough exhaustion and confusion that I kept on listening because I honestly don't think I could have read it on the page. I would have just said, oh, no. This is too dumb. But Marin was really, really good. And she was particularly, I mean, because I kept on listening and it kept me engaged enough. So literally, I was listening in my car, Michelle, and as I'm driving, we're hearing this story and I'm talking out loud saying, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? How can you believe this? Are you kidding me? And that was because of Marin. She was just marvelous. She deserves an earphones for this. I mean, of course, Eduardo and January are equally good, but I thought Marin really had a steep hill to climb.
Well, that's where I find, again, that the audio can work well because it can help you just get past any moments that might not be fully plausible to you. And, you know, help you build intensity around what's going on. I mean, it's a relatively short title at 8 hours. And to me, it went by so quickly because there were twists and turns and I was interested in these characters. And actually, I recently interviewed January about the title. So I encourage everyone to check out that episode. She really dives into her character and gave it some interesting background. And I mean, the majority of the book is the two females as they're kind of locking horns, and you can feel the energy that they're putting in as narrators as they have to, you know, draw from their own well of emotional plausibility. There we go. As they're fighting each other.
I agree. And I just want to say I was so grateful to Marin, who kept me in the book long enough to move on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? To let the rest of the story unfold, because it has twists, it has turns, it's fun and horrifying.
Yes. And that's, I think the fun is what it came fast enough for me with Marin's narration that I was enjoying myself. I thought this was kind of hilarious as a title. It did kind of surprise me in the ways that it was going. And so I was able to put aside any disbelief and just go on the wild ride.
Yeah. And what a ride. And I just, January and Marin really approach tension so differently, which works so well in this book.
Oh, completely. And I was telling January when I interviewed her that, you know, it almost didn't sound like her.
Right?
It took me a minute to be like, oh, wait, that is January. She did some different things. The performances in this are great. And if you're willing to just say, hey, fantastic summer listen, let's go for it, then you can really fly through this. Because I flew through it and I was like, oh, that was over so fast. I didn't feel it at all, even though there were some things happening that, you know, if I had sat and thought about it, I might have rolled my eyes.
Yeah, no, for sure, for sure. And definitely listen to this book. That would be my complete recommendation. And so why don't we listen to part of it?
All right. This is Naomi Marin playing her. She doesn't know what's coming.
Oh, God. Though anybody with half a brain does. All right. This is The Divorce by Freda McFadden, narrated by January Lavoy, Marin Ireland, and Eduardo Ballerini. And we're hearing from Marin.
This is not a big deal. It's just a quick renovation, and then our lives will be back to normal. I repeat those words to myself over and over as I drive to the two-bedroom apartment where Jeremy's parents lived until their deaths. It's a 20-minute drive, although it only took 15 when Jeremy used to do it. He doesn't quite believe in the speed limit. As I pull into the driveway of the small house with two apartment units inside, I imagine what Jeremy and Teddy might be doing right now. Jeremy claimed he could handle dinner, but I've never actually seen him cook anything in the entire time we've been together, even in the microwave. All he does is make coffee. What if Jeremy doesn't microwave the frozen chicken nuggets right? What if Teddy is sitting at the dining table right now, his belly rumbling, and there's nothing he can eat? And then he notices I'm gone, and he becomes inconsolable. I have to take a few deep breaths to get myself under control. Jeremy is a successful investment banker, and he's clearly capable of feeding our child dinner for one night.
I just found this part particularly so pathetic and salvaged by Marin Ireland, really. I kind of like the way she lets emotions kind of spill messily, you know, across the edges of things. I think she really did a wonderful performance.
Yeah, and it's all props to you. A messy character. So
it's a messy character, and she wasn't afraid of being messy.
No one in this book is afraid of being messy.
No one. Okay, you had some week.
I did. It was just like this last one, a wild ride.
It was a wild ride. Michelle, thank you so much.
Great. Thanks, Joe.
You've been listening to Behind the Mic with Kirkus Reviews. We drop on Thursdays, and if you follow us, we will just appear in your feed. And while you're at it, follow Fully Booked by Kirkus Reviews. Fully Booked is the podcast for book lovers. Every Tuesday, host Megan LaBrise brings you author interviews, industry insights, and recommendations from the bestseller list. Find your next great book on Fully Booked by Kirkus Reviews. And then stop by KirkusReviews.com to check out reviews for both print and audiobooks. Behind the Mic is produced by Jessica Lockhart, Michelle Cobb, Stephen Cummings, Leslie Fine, Alan Minskoff, Alex Ritchie, Laura Rossi, Laura Simeon, and Kendra Winchester are our contributors. Jennifer Dowell is our editor, with an assistance from Alicia Langerman. Tom Beer is the executive producer, and the music is William Ross Chernoff's Nomads Four Way. And I'm your host, Joe Reed. Good listening.